I guess so. Well, and there's still more seats up front if anybody wants to grab them, rather than stand in the back or anything. Oh, is this a good mic placement and everything? I just tossed it on myself. Excellent. All right, so my name is Sean O'Toole, and I'm going to be speaking to you about metamorphic viruses. And I wanted to stress that I know this whole conference is educational purposes only, but I want to stress that this one is definitely, because I don't want to see anybody's grandmother not be able to access their email or something because I gave a speech. You know, you guys are the computer guys of the your families, so you know if they have a problem, you're going to hear about it. And so, my speech on metamorphic viruses, I'm going to start off with going through like some pseudocode on how the various modules work. And then after that, I'll talk about like some of the AV approaches to it. And also, on the CD, I wanted to mention that I did have some misspellings, but, you know, it was a late night presentation that I was putting together after a friend's birthday, so you know what happens. So as we go on, I just wanted to give you a couple of the definitions, one from Peter Zohr, who's a well-known antivirus person, down to like your virus people, and it goes from body polymorphics, where they swear they've always been around, and simpler techniques, down to the artist's extreme mutation. So we got that going. Now I'm going to give a brief description of all of the various sections, or the main sections that you'll see or are theorized. The first one is the disassembler, which mainly usually has some way of putting something into a structure or something, a lot of reverse engineering tools and whatnot. And then the second is the depermutator, which takes the code that's been shuffled and connected by jumps and puts it straight down to the straightest code that the algorithm can put it back together with. And also the shrinker, which takes opcodes and clusters of opcode and recombines them. Say, like, if you have a push EBX pop ECX, it becomes a move ECX comma EBX type of thing. So these two and three are mainly the ones that get you back down to the skeleton of your virus that it can be expanded on later with these ones, the expanders, which will do exactly the reverse of the shrinker, and the permutator, which shuffles the code, links it with jumps, and so forth. And also we get down to the reassembler, which places the virus back together, fixes jumps, and so forth. And these six are the main ones that you'll see or hear theorized. Like a shrinker is very rare. Expander, permutator, those are ones that are more used. And here's just one that I want to go over really quick, is when you're programming these viruses or looking at them, you got to think in a very software engineering type of thinking towards it, because, you know, you want to think in modules, everything's separate, we just pass this information to this one, so you don't end up getting into this huge project that never finishes. So we get down to the disassembler. We have two choices. One is one that I haven't really passed across, but is heavily theorized to make a pseudo language so that you can change, like, say if you want to go from ELF to x86, you can change a few things in there through your pseudo language before you put it back down into the assembly language. And also we have reverse engineering tools, which the zombie is the main person that puts those together. The LDE was an earlier version of the ADE, which has a linked list of structures. And the structure is actually inside with that module when you get it. So you can look at kind of like the manual, and it will tell you basically what you got to deal with after you run it. Oh, and also one of the things about the disassembler is also that it's not always able to reverse engineer all files. It just has some. So it cuts out some of the selection process. And here's one from the Mental Drills article, Practice on Metamorphism, that's a little example of how you can put together your pseudo AI language. One is that you could, you have the opcode, the instructions tell you, of course, which registers and whatnot. LM, which is label marker, which tells you later if there's a label that points to that that maybe jumped to. And this is very important for shrinkers and so forth, because if you shrink an instruction and there's a label in between that cluster, then you've just basically screwed up the whole thing that it's jumping to, because you've added too much code into one area. Also, we have like the idea of how to deal with the opcode. You can say that move is a 40. If you're doing memory to register, it's plus 2. So move memory to register would become 42. And there's also a full list of the idea of putting pseudo opcodes like this in the same article. So now we get down to the depermutator, because the other choice for the assembler disassembler could be found in its manual pages. And the depermutator, as I said earlier, just deshuffles the code, if you will. And this can be put in its own module, or it can be included in the disassembly process, depending on which way you'd like to go. And here's like the pseudocode at the beginning. You got the variables that, like, you start out with the entry point of the what you're disassembling or depermutating. You have a path marker, which is your buffer for after you're depermutating code. A label, which is two D words. One is the old address of the code, and one's the new address of the code, which later on some of these won't have an old address, which we'll see, and this is very important for jump fixing later on, as well as other things. And the future jump label table, which has labels that you don't want to deal with yet through the algorithm. And you'll, of course, zero out the path markers so you don't end up hitting random opcodes that are just somewhere, something that was in that buffer, so that you think that this could be a portion of what you're depermutating. And you translate the current instruction pointer into the ESI. And then here's what you do for a jump. If you have a jump and you've already depermutated it, of course, you just jump it back to that. And that's one of the things about this algorithm that makes you know that you cannot have the same depermutated virus every time. You may have a jump from a couple generations back that the algorithm never really took out. And then if you have not depermutated yet, you put in a no op unless it's just in case if it's being pointed to. And then you just go on from where the jump leads you. And then you have the conditional jumps, which a lot of times are just kept in there, and they're put in the future label table and whatnot. You can see everything here. Calls, same as conditional jumps. Returns just goes to the future label table, so you move one leaf up the code tree and get back to it. And then here's a little note I wanted to make sure that we had on there, which is when getting a new EIP from the future label table, we check if the labels stored here or already been depermutated. If they are, then we insert the corresponding labels at the label table and eliminate the entry in future label tables. If not, we get the new EIP continue. And also, I just had like a little note here for if you're making it standalone and whatnot, you're going to have to do a lot more list things if you're doing it standalone, because in two buffers, so that's one of the reasons it's usually in the disassembler. It will take up less room. And here's a little example here. And we see that the triple X's are the code that is meaningful. And so the Y codes are the ones that are unreachable. So this is another thing that your depermutator will help you do. It'll allow you to put in worthless code that will never be reached, so that it's just in there. It makes it look different. We see this beforehand. We got the conditional jump. We got some of the other jumps. After it runs, we got this. No more of the Ys. There are useless instructions. Once you hit a jump, links you straight to where that code was, goes through there until you've hit it all, and that's what's there. And then we get to the shrinker, which is extremely rare to find and will reappear in our AV section. And this is basically, the like I was saying, the inverse of the expander. And I haven't run upon it, so that's why it's not in, I don't have any examples of it anywhere. And so we have the pseudocode for that right here, which we can see is basically looking through and seeing if we can find code clusters and switching them back to their most simple ones, which I do it as if there's a list of these conversions, but many times it's just a whole function that just does one thing. Then we get to the expander, which is the inverse of the shrinker. And basically, that's usually a standalone thing, and usually also those don't use a list or anything to see what the conversions are. Mainly, they're just functions already written out, like the Win9x Ramones virus will have some of these so that you can take a reference point to see how they're done. And here's the pseudocode for that. We have is expandable. I forgot to switch it to an actual number rather than a Boolean. But basically, the expandable question is how many times can we how can we expand it? Three opcodes, two opcodes, or just switch opcodes? And it goes through and it says, okay, if we got this random number, we got this, we're going to do it. And that's basically that pseudocode. And that's just why it's telling you about how you can make a expandable or is expandable type of thing. It shows zero, there's no way to expand it. Seven, you can expand it all three different ways and up and down the line with the various combinations. And that's on the same thing. So we get to the permutator, which you can see in the ghost virus, C-perm, as well as in a lot of other zombie viruses. And here's the pseudocode for that, which basically it goes through, like, well, this one's when it's actually kind of shuffling beforehand. So it just puts the code groups together, puts a jump in after that code group. And then we come into this one, which goes to the jump, and it inserts the proper address to jump to the next code group in the sequence. Oh, I also forgot to mention, I changed my presentation a little bit, so it's different from the one on the CD. But it's just so if you're following along on a computer, just so you don't get lost, I've made a lot of changes. In the assembler section, the main thing that you have to worry about, rather than the whole like converting all the stuff, is the main thing is to do jump relocation fixes. Which so your old sit point or your old jump will go to the proper jump once it's reassembled in a new program. And here we usually initialize a couple tables, one that's 8 bytes long, 4 bytes for where the new instruction pointer is, 4 bytes for where the old instruction was located. And then we have a jump table, which basically lists the offsets of our jumps, jumping to the instructions so we can check, and they're the older jumps, so you can check these old jumps match. Now we should change it to this new one. And basically, that's what this for loop does with the if in it. Checks to see, goes through if there's still jumps to be processed. It goes to the jump table and goes through until it hits the end. And then comes down and sees if the old jump table address is the same as the old jump table address in the EIP table. And then assigns the new one if the old ones match. Other ideas that have come up about this is one of them was it's been an extremely old idea that's been done a lot. Even I can't think of any of the DOS viruses, but there have been ones that have done that. And it's register exchange. One generation, you have EAX doing all these operations for you. Next generation, you may have EBX doing it, which will change if you're doing a signature scan, it changes the opcode. Then we have entry point obscuring techniques, which have been fairly popular. So basically that is when you put a jump or a call at the host's entrance in the file, and then it jumps straight to the virus code, runs it, jumps back. And then there was one that's only been seen in the ZMIST virus, which is unknown entry point. And what that does is it interjects the virus straight into the stream of code, which this can be done with your reassembler after disassembling both the host and the previous generation virus. And then we have other modules that you see a lot of them, like trash code generation that was big during a lot of email spreading viruses and worms and whatnot. And that one could be added, but there's a drawback that will be that your code will keep on growing throughout, which what always happens with a garbage code generator. But also this can be used to change like signatures, and we'll see why this might become important with a new type of AV technique that they're thinking of making. And then we have encryption, be it polymorphic, be it just regular encryption. These things are, you can also include them, but you have to be careful how you do it so that, say, like, sometimes a flag will be thrown up because you're using a certain technique to polymorphically encrypt and decrypt your virus. But say a properly done one would be ZMIST is a great example of that one too, which is one of the greater viruses out there. And what it does is it acts exactly like a file that will decompress at runtime when it uses its polymorphic engine. So here comes the start of our AV section. I just wanted to put up this quote from an article about ZMIST that says that metamorphism is something that's going to be pretty crazy and we need to find out something to do for it. And since ZMIST and the unexpected entry point have been written by Zombie, I found an article by Zombie that shows what the implications of doing this would be. And you have your variables, and this is basically saying if you're doing a signature scan, you have to run through it until you know you're definitely on the virus. You don't know how long that will take. So I've been mentioning signature scans, so just in case if people don't know, I had like a little slide to tell you about signature scans, which is basically the oldest technique for virus finding viruses, and it's just to check a string of bytes or so forth to see if it matches a signature in a database. And if those match, then most likely you have a virus. And there's many other things. Say like ZMIST is my major example because that's the one that uses the most metamorphic techniques as a date that I've seen. And in his, he puts a Z in the DOS header. And that is his mark for I've infected that file. So, and these are you need these marks so you don't constantly infect the same file. And it's but it's still a constant struggle in between. Will the virus recognize it? Will the AVs recognize it? And one thing is this one's somewhat ambiguous because a Z is allowed in that portion of the header. And so that you know sometimes the virus may not infect every file it can. Infecting ones that are already not infected, and at the same time, the AV will look at it and say, we're really not sure. This could be a legitimate Z, or it could be a Z placed by the virus. And next, we come on to geometric scanning, which is one of the downfalls of like polymorphism. But we see with ZMIST, it was able to beat it by acting like a runtime self-decompressing file. And basically what a geometric scan does is check the size changes in the file so they can say, all right, this is acting like this, this is acting like that, because the initialized data section's grown this much. And then we have the possible answers, because we saw that ZMIST had beaten the previous ones. And one of them is to combine various techniques and use kind of a heuristic idea. But this fails because it takes a lot of time, and nobody's going to run anything if it takes a lot of time. And also, there's always like anti-emulation, debugging, all that type of stuff, techniques coming out so that some of these techniques will fail. The AV techniques will fail if they try to use them with these other anti-star, whatever you want to call them, techniques included. And the second, which is a fairly new one, and I actually was looking around the internet and I saw that there's somebody that might be talking about this at the Virus Bulletin conference. And it's to use a shrinker, like we were talking, one of the parts of the virus, the shrinker and the depermutator, so that you can have this virus depermutate and shrink to its skeleton. And that's where the executable trash generator being left in there can help it out, because at its skeleton you'll still have opcodes that weren't there a generation beforehand. And so, yeah, and we see the flaws in the answers. They take too long. You're not able to do some techniques if they include various ways of programming. And but the shrinker is the closest one we have, so that's what they have to go with. And I just want to include a section that's why this might be stronger for compared to other techniques. And trash generation, of course, you just have worthless code and the virus grows loads and loads every time it passes a generation. So after a while, a file will get big enough and they'll know that something's happened. And also in polymorphism, the body, usually you can always take like a static picture of the body, or at least portions of the body at times throughout the running of the virus. So you can know that though it's decrypted now, it's encrypted now, it always has to decrypt itself. So you have the same code once it's decrypted. Well, I'm sorry, I'm kind of new to the speaking to large crowds, so I might have flew through that too fast, but I just wanted to open the floor to question and answer or anything like that. Yes?
Wouldn't most of these viruses be small enough that if you took a snapshot of any part of the body, that could look the same as like another program part?
Are we talking about the with the polymorphism? It's possible that this could happen, but I haven't really checked too much into polymorphism, to tell you the truth. I just looked at a few techniques and saw what they did, but I haven't really caught any like software stuff for doing the decryption methods for like brute forcing the detection. I'm sorry. Yes?
The stuff that part that finds the process of the green thing that you can be detected as a signal, because you have to be a standard part, which is not encrypted, is always the same. Can it be used to detect that is your virus, your virus?
Which section were we talking about?
In the part that finds the process of the printing virus
I'm sorry, I can't really hear you too well up here, so I kind of miss pieces and I think they're important. Wait.
There is a part that is common to all these not encrypted, it's not polymorphic, which is the start of the virus. Is that the signature that can be easily recognized from the virus software?
I will wait.
We have to be.
Well, his question was, if I recognize it correctly, is there a static part in metamorphic viruses that can always be recognized? And the thing is since it can always be randomly expanded or permutated, you could step through it, but of course you'll still have different opcodes because of the expander or register exchange type of thing. So that's where the strength is that you can change like opcodes, and that's where mainly signatures are strings of opcodes. To recognize changes, I haven't looked too much into that, but that sounds like an interesting idea that could be tried. Because mainly what I've heard is the shrinker idea, which will give you the code skeleton. Yes? This is how it shows how ridiculous viruses have gotten. Say, like, if you have not even all of the major six I was talking about, but maybe you say four of them. I say, like, the ZNIST virus. I remember that being, I want to say, around 70, 80 pages or so, and some of it's also done in C, so, you know, that makes it even bigger. So it's, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, no, go ahead. The thing is with this virus, basically we rewrote something, or with these viruses, the expander is basically an unoptimizer, which is really funny because, like, you know, back not too long ago, everything had to be optimized for a virus. Nowadays, we're writing things to unoptimize them afterwards, so it shows that you really don't need optimization because we have so much room to deal with. The techniques, it's no specific technique, basically it just looks through most of them just look through, compare opcodes, because most of them are functions now, and they'll say, like, is this the opcode? If yes, change it to this. Yeah, the compression is basically, like, say for an easy example, push EBX, pop ECX becomes, move ECX, comma EBX. Basically, that's it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's 10.
There's 10? Yeah, I haven't opened up the CD, so I... Wow. Are there any other... yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. Can you stand up? With behavior blockers, I don't. Yeah, well, I with the thing with behavior scanners is that if the behavior is found, of course, anything, once you see what it will do, you'll know what's happening. But a lot of times, that takes a lot of time, and then say, like, for emulation, sometimes there's ways that people have found to block emulation, so it'd be more of like a integrity scanner than an integrity scanner. Basically, you're already infected, and that's why it knows you're have been infected. I don't have my notes on it right now, but there's a few ways to, if I remember correctly, it's placement of, like, variables below the call, so they, and it's, like, one of the hard-coded ones, like, so if you do, I think it's, like, usually if you put the address that you want to put in for your call or jump, and I think it's, if you put in the instruction to do, like, $-4, so it throws it back up in the instruction. If I remember correctly, that was one of them, but I don't know. It's been a while since I've read up too much on that. A good reference, I'd basically say just reading through code is, like, the best reference. So sometimes, you know, usually you can find some that's common where they say this is this technique being done. Type of thing, so that'd be the best start, I'd say, and best reference. I know of some places where you can get, like, viruses that have the comments in them and so forth that use anti-emulation. I don't know if they're still fairly new, and well, usually you can go to the same websites I accessed some of my data off of for metamorphism, and they'll talk about that as well. So say like, Zombie's website, if you go to his, which is z0mbie.host.sk, and you would go to some of his links, you'll probably find some on his page and some on some of his link pages that you can look at. Any more questions? Okay, thank you for coming. Also, I'd like to thank my school because they're going to most likely help me pay for some of the trip over here. So I wanted to thank Regis University. Thank you.